Welcome to Biz Help for You. I'm your host, Candy Messer, and today I'm going to discuss some of the audits you may face in your business. We are all familiar with income tax audits, and I'll touch base on those, but there are a few others you may not be aware of.
Welcome to Biz Help for You, the show that saves you the expensive learning curve by providing advice from industry experts in every facet of the entrepreneurial journey. Too many small businesses collapse. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 20% fail within their first year, and less than 35% make it to their 10th anniversary. The goal of this podcast is to change that statistic. So if you're interested in learning more to be a successful entrepreneur, tune in today.
Today's discussion will also touch on sales tax, remote employees, workplace notices, and payroll. Let's start out with the one that pops into your head when you hear the word audit, the IRS. Keep in mind, the percentage of returns that are audited is extremely low, but they do occur, so it's good to know what they look for. Here are some of the red flags that could trigger an audit. Not reporting all taxable income. Too many charitable deductions, deducting business meals, travel, and entertainment, claiming 100% business use of a vehicle, writing off a loss for a hobby activity, claiming the home office deduction, running a small business, large cash transactions, and making a lot of money. Let's go into a bit more detail on each of these. Not reporting all taxable income. The obvious items here are wages or compensation as a freelance worker. Be sure to report all taxable income from all W-2s and 1099s you receive. The IRS receives copies of your W-2s and 1099s, so a mismatch on your reported income will immediately raise a red flag. But there is other income you need to report, including investment income, such as dividends, interest, and capital gains. Also include income from your business that is not paid through a W-2. Two items often overlooked include cryptocurrency and barter. The use of virtual currencies to pay for goods or services, or holding virtual currencies as an investment, generally has tax consequences. And although money may not have been received when bartering, you must include in income the fair market value of the goods or services received. Too many charitable deductions. The IRS considers the average donation at all income levels, so make sure your charitable deductions are not disproportionately large compared to your income. The larger the contribution, the more supporting documentation may be required. And remember, you can only claim donations to those approved by the IRS. Although you may have made donations to others in their times of need, you won't be able to deduct for these contributions unless paid directly to an approved organization. Finally, if you made a donation to an approved charity but received some type of good or service, you must deduct the fair market value for what was received from your donation. Deducting business meals and entertainment. The Tax Cuts and Job Act passed in 2017 changed the deductibility of entertainment expenses. Anything considered entertainment, amusement, or recreation can no longer be used to reduce your tax liability. One thing to note is that if food is included in the entertainment, you have it billed separately or itemized, then you can still claim the expense for the food cost. However, it is not a 100% deduction, rather a 50% write-off is allowed. Claiming 100% business use of a vehicle. Unless you truly have an automobile used solely for your company, it's impossible to claim 100% business use of a vehicle without raising red flags. Keep a log of your mileage, showing business and personal mile used for each trip. As an alternative, you can use the IRS standard mileage rate. However, you won't be able to claim any out-of-pocket expenses such as maintenance or insurance using the simplified method. Writing off a loss for a hobby activity. If you receive income from a hobby, you must report it. The expenses you incur can be deducted up to that income level. However, the IRS does not allow writing off losses from a hobby. You may have started a business which over time has had losses, and if there are 3 out of the last 5 years with losses, you may be prevented from deducting any losses as the IRS may identify your endeavor as a hobby and not a business. Claiming the home office deduction. If you have a home office, you can claim the space and deduct a percentage of the related expenses such as rent, real estate taxes, and utilities. You can also opt to use the standard rate of $5 per square foot of space with a maximum deduction of $1,500. It's important to note that as many now work from home rather than in an office, it's tempting to claim this deduction. But unless it's a dedicated space set up to specifically use for work, the expense can't be used. Running a small business. For small business owners in a cash-intensive business, maintaining detailed records of all transactions is of utmost importance. Those with cash revenue are less likely to accurately report all taxable income and as such can be an easy target for the IRS. Be sure to keep accurate records and save all documentation as proof to support your claims. Large cash transactions. Like businesses in cash-based industries, having large cash transactions is also a red flag. Banks are required to report cash transactions larger than $10,000, as well as large cash transactions that look suspicious. Depositing large cash amounts within a small time frame will likely prompt your bank to report suspicious activity. Making a lot of money. Those reporting $1 million or more on income are more likely to be audited, especially if they have business income. With the IRS having additional funds allocated for audits, they are looking at those that have a greater chance of yielding additional tax dollars for the Treasury. Now that you know some of the triggers that could result in an income tax audit, be sure you are prepared if any of these apply to your business. Keep excellent records that are easily accessible in the event you must support your claim for deductions and reported income. Now that I've covered the one everyone thinks when you hear the word audit, let's look at some of the less obvious areas. The next one I want to discuss is residency audits. With the Tax Cuts and Job Act placing a $10,000 cap on state tax deductions, many people sought to establish residency in a lower tax state. While California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Rhode Island are considered high tax states, Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming are considered low tax locations. With so many residents of highly taxed states migrating and establishing residency elsewhere, state governments are performing residency audits to determine whether taxes can still be collected. So who is being audited? These residency audits primarily affect high-income individuals and can be very costly for the taxpayer if it's determined that they do, in fact, owe taxes to their previous high-tax state. If the individual in question still owns property in the high-tax state, it is even more likely that they will be targeted for an audit. So what do these audits look for? State governments use a variety of methods to test for domicile or statutory residence, which looks for evidence that proves that the taxpayer has spent 183 days or more in the high-tax state in the fiscal year. For the statutory test, auditors employ high-tech methods such as reading cell phone records, credit card swipe histories, flight records, doctor's records, and even social media feeds to determine whether the taxpayer has been in state for 183 days or more. If findings suggest that they have, they're considered a statutory citizen and may be subject to double taxation since they must pay tax in 2 states. The domicile test is more subjective than the statutory test and considers factors such as which house is larger, where most of the taxpayer's prized possessions, such as photo albums, artwork, and jewelry are kept, and where family members live and attend school. Establishing residency in another state is a tricky business that can potentially have unintended tax consequences. If you're thinking about starting the process, it is important to talk to your tax professional. Be aware of the residency tests employed by state governments and keep extensive documentation to protect yourself in the event of an audit. The next audit I want to discuss is for sales tax and use tax. So, who gets audited? Although any business can be audited at any time, certain industries are more vulnerable to audits than others because of how sales and use tax regulations impact their business. In fact, more than half of all audits in the United States target just a handful of industries: construction, food service, manufacturing, retail, and wholesale distribution. In addition, auditors often focus efforts on businesses with a high volume of exempt transactions. Specific events such as late filing or dramatic change in taxable or exempt sales year over year can also draw an auditor's eye. Many audits are aimed at out-of-state companies with ties to the state. Retailers that sell to consumers in multiple states may not collect and remit tax wherever they have nexus, which is an obligation to collect. Companies that sell to nonprofit entities may not properly charge those entities' taxes required. Not all nonprofits are entitled to a sales tax exemption on all purchases. And then there's use tax. Businesses across all industries often fail to remit use tax on taxable items purchased tax-free from vendors in other states, or items taken from inventory for business or personal use. Let's look at some of the typical errors made when it comes to sales tax. The first mistake is neglecting sales tax completely. Some assume that what they're selling is not taxable, but the rule is, unless it's specifically exempt, you must collect sales tax on the sale of the product or service. If you're not sure if your business or the product you sell requires sales tax, research Nexus and how your business applies to the various state sales tax laws in which you operate. The second misconception is assuming that because the product or service you sell isn't taxable in your home state, that it's not taxable in any. States decide what is subject to sales and use tax, and the rules can vary widely. If you're selling in a state other than where your business is physically located and meet the reporting requirements, it's imperative to research the guidelines to determine if you must collect sales tax from your clients. A third error is getting the numbers wrong. With sales tax regulations as numerous as the states and jurisdictions who require it, keeping track of the percentages and amounts can be tricky, not to mention time-consuming, while reporting the wrong numbers can cause potential fees. One mistake is using the billing address to determine tax instead of the shipping address. Tax is based on where the product or service is being delivered, not on who places the order, so be sure to use the zip code where the recipient will be receiving the goods to determine the tax. Another mistake is not charging the correct tax rate. Jurisdictions can change the amount to charge. This often happens when voters approve an increase in their city or county. Be sure to check quarterly to make sure no rate increase has occurred, as changes can go into effect at any start of any quarter. The third mistake is not paying use tax due. This usually occurs when a business purchases a product to resell, but then uses it themselves. For instance, a hair salon buys shampoo for customers to buy, but then takes a bottle out of inventory to use on clients at their appointments. If you purchase something tax-free, but use the product, you owe use tax. To easily track the tax due, sell yourself the product to capture it in your accounting system. A fourth error is missing filing due dates. Forget when and how to collect sales tax. The filing procedures alone are enough to make your head spin. Missing a due date or filing incorrectly can result in penalties or non-filing fees, so be sure to educate yourself on what's required and when. It's important to know that some states require monthly prepayments of tax even when the actual report is due quarterly, and some of those dates can be quite unique. For instance, in California, prepayments are due the 24th of the months following the first two periods of the quarter. In New York, the quarterly reporting isn't on a calendar quarter. Rather, reports are due March, June, September, and December for the prior 3 months. So the reports due in March report sales in December, January, and February. Be sure to determine your sales tax due dates and set reminders to ensure you file on time, while always checking that regulations haven't changed recently. Most states require businesses to file each period, even if they don't have any sales tax to report. So, what to expect during a sales tax audit? It's not unusual for an audit of a small or mid-sized company to last between 30 and 45 days. If you are a brick-and-mortar location, the audit may occur at your place of business, but many times you can submit information online, at least to start the process. It is wise to institute best practices throughout the year. For example, exemption certificates should be up to date and readily available. Invoices should prove the proper amount of sales tax has been collected and remitted on taxable sales, and records should show that the use tax has been paid whenever due. Auditors will only linger when there's cause to do so. Time is money for them too. Another type of audit you may not have considered is the workplace poster audit. For some business owners, pinning up a workplace poster may seem like a simple one-and-done principle. All bases covered so long as the required state and federal posters are visible within the business. As it turns out, however, there's so much more required of an employer to be compliant. But unfortunately, this is often only discovered after an audit. Protect yourself and the rights of your employees by making sure your workplace posters are up to par by checking for these five simple factors. Number one, all municipal posters are displayed. Most businesses feature those required by federal and state law, but do you have those needed to satisfy local and city regulations as well? Check the laws affecting your specific address and be sure to pin up the necessary posters in all business locations. Number two, all posters are up to date. Laws change with the years, and so should your posters. Check that all workplace posters are up to date and mark your calendars with reminders to repeat the process annually. Number three, the poster is in multiple languages. For some posters, multiple languages other than English are required to ensure equal representation. A common example of this being bilingual posters in both English and Spanish. Be sure to check with your local regulations to see what languages must be featured within the workplace. Number four, posters are displayed correctly. Not only should all your posters be within clear view, but some come with their own size, font, and display requirements. For example, many posters cannot be obstructed, defaced, or covered by any object, while the Occupational Safety and Health Association, OSHA, job safety and health poster must be 8.5 by 14 and in 10-point font or larger. In addition, posters must be presented in places employees frequent often, like a break room or an office, or on every floor in the case of large corporations. Even remote employees must be provided with their own copy, whether sent electronically or otherwise. Number five, all fields are completed. Some posters come with their own fill-in-the-blank sections, and it's up to the employer to do so. Don't just print and post on autopilot. Read through the requirements and check that all fields have been completed and signed off, as well as up to date. As with most employer requirements, many failed audits, penalties, and legal troubles can be avoided through simple, regularly scheduled checks of the workplace, and posters are no exception. Protect your business in the event of an audit and ensure that all required posters are up to the current regulations. The last type of audit I'll discuss today is a payroll audit. This can come about because something seems unusual in your reporting, but often more likely is someone paid as an independent contractor filed for unemployment benefits thinking they qualified. The state tax agency will want to see if the workers have been misclassified. If so, you could face serious penalties and be required to pay back taxes that should have been collected. Often, business owners feel that the effort to correctly pay wages as employees is complicated, or they don't want to incur costs using a payroll company or having to remit the employer share of taxes, so they elect to pay the worker as an independent contractor. But the states and the IRS have very specific rules around who must be paid as an employee. If you are notified that you'll be audited and you have paid a worker as a 1099 contractor rather than as an employee, be prepared to be assessed penalties and interest on the amounts paid outside of payroll. But it can get worse. Not only may you be charged for the one employee in question, but they may audit all of your records for multiple years to see if you did the same for other workers. If so, you will be responsible for paying the employee and employer share of the tax that should have been paid, as well as penalties and interest dating back to the period in which they should have been filed. So if they go back 3 years, you'll owe the penalties and interest that has accrued for that period of time. If you're currently paying workers as independent contractors because you feel it's easier, you don't want to be charged payroll processing fees, or the worker has asked to be paid this way so taxes aren't withheld, I strongly encourage you to look at the guidelines and see if you should change your methods. The cost you'll incur for payroll processing and the employer taxes will be much less than having to pay back taxes, penalties, and interest if you are audited. As a cautionary tale, I want to share an example with you of a real-life situation that happened. Many years ago, I had a referral from an attorney whose client was being audited for payroll. The business owner thought they were doing everything correctly. They paid the worker as an independent contractor, as they had control of their schedule, they could choose to lead a class or not, and this was before the state created stricter rules stating that if the person does the work directly related to the income of the business, that they must be an employee. In this scenario, the worker tried to steal clients and start their own business. The entrepreneur learned of the deception and ended the relationship with the worker. That person filed for unemployment, but since they were paid as an independent contractor, they did not appear on employee records or payroll reports. The state opened an audit and review of the prior 3 years and determined the worker should have been an employee. They assessed penalties and interest for the 3 years of compensation, but also alerted the IRS of the misclassification, and the business was also charged for the federal payroll taxes for the 3 years as well. The amount incurred for back taxes was more than the business owner could afford to pay, and the business was closed. So I strongly encourage you to assess those performing duties for you and determine if they should be employees rather than independent contractors. If so, reclassify them and begin compensating them as employees. There are very specific factors which you can use to analyze the positions of each person working for you to determine if you are misclassifying workers. I have shared blogs and videos on this topic, and I will put links in the show notes so that you can have the resources at your fingertips. The audits that I discussed today are not an exhaustive list, but I did cover the most typical ones you may encounter. Although the word audit can strike fear in your heart, if you're doing everything correctly, you can be confident that you will come out fine in the end. I have a client who was selected for a sales tax audit twice. The first one came back with no change, no tax due, and 3 or 4 years later was selected again. I remember him saying that he was not worried as he knew we maintained all his records and he collected everything properly. Once again, he received a no change, no tax due finding. It is my guess that he will most likely not be selected again since he's proven he collects and remits properly. So if you are selected for an audit and are found to have done everything correctly, you may not have to worry about an audit again, or at least not for quite a while if the particular audit is not done at random. To wrap up today's episode, I want to encourage you to look at each of these areas of your business and see if you are doing everything properly. If not, make the needed changes today. Don't assume that because audit percentages are low, your risk of an audit is minuscule. A red flag can bring attention to you very easily, and it's much better to resolve any issues before you are audited than to be selected and penalized for doing things incorrectly. Even if it's an honest mistake, it can be costly. So I hope you found today's discussion helpful. I know most don't want to think of an audit, but my goal is to educate you to know what you must do to be compliant and avoid penalties and interest for errors. If you find you need assistance with your bookkeeping, payroll, sales tax, or other reporting requirements, be sure to reach out to us at 310-534-5577 or contact at abandp.com. My staff and I are eager to assist you.
Thank you for tuning in today. Would you please share this episode with those you know and leave a review on your favorite platform? And if you find our show informative, would you consider being a financial sponsor to help me continue my mission to educate business owners? A link is located in the episode description, and no amount is too small. I'd really appreciate your support. If you are interested in connecting with our guest and receiving the offer they had to share, a link to our resource page is in the show notes. Finally, if you have any bookkeeping or payroll needs, reach out to us at 310-534-5577 or contact at abandp.com. My team and I are eager to assist you. Until next time, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Biz Help For You. Please join your host, Candy Messer, again next time. Have a terrific day.